House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources for March 25th, 2003. Slight change in the order. We're going to do House Bill 2372 first. And we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2372. Ray, we have some amendments, don't we?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As soon as I grab that. We have a dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2372. House Bill 2372, as you recall, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, eliminates sunset date on property tax exemptions for environmentally sensitive logging equipment and skyline swing yarders. The original measure modified the definition of environmentally sensitive logging for tax years began on or after July 1, 2004. The effect of the dash 2 committee amendment is it replaces the entire original amendment with the exception of removing the statutory sunset date. So if the committee was to adopt the dash 2 amendments, the only effect of House Bill 2372 would be to remove the sunset date that exists currently in statute. Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Ray. Who do we have signed up? Do we have anyone?
Yes, we have Jim Geisinger, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Very good. Jim, come forward if you would, and to members of the audience and everyone present today, I'll give my standard little speech. If you sign up today on the witness registration sheet, there is a little box here that says, Attention Public Officials and Lobbyists. By signing this sheet, you're recognizing and acknowledging that you've read the two ORSs that govern your testimony as being truthful and accurate. If you are not a member of a government body or a lobbyist, it doesn't apply to you. On the other hand, we always want you to give us truthful and accurate testimony. So, having said that, welcome, Jim. Good to have you here. And I didn't do that just for your benefit. I just forgot to start the meeting that way like I normally do. Welcome, and what do these amendments do for us?
They simplify the bill, frankly, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the chance to testify. Just wanted to say we support the amendments. It simplifies the bill. It makes it absolutely clear that there is no revenue impact in the next two bienniums. So it is our hope that you would choose to pass this bill out of committee this afternoon. And that concludes my testimony, unless there's any questions.
Okay, any questions, members?
This representative votes amendment 2372.
Okay.
Thank you.
The chair would like to welcome back our vice chair, Representative Kelly Wirth, who's been on extended leave. It's good to have you back. Okay, Representative Beyer, you have a question.
No, I just a comment. I want to thank everybody involved in this for addressing my concerns on this bill, and I certainly appreciate it.
It's our pleasure.
Very good. Any additional questions of Jim?
We're doing this first.
Okay, hearing none. Thank you. No, we're working for the session. Anyone else like to testify on this House Bill 2372? Hearing none, we're going to close a work session on House Bill 2372. Excuse me, we're going to close a public hearing. Yes, yes. Well, who said I was perfect? No one.
I did.
All right, we are going to open a work session on House Bill 2372.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I move dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2372.
Oh, no, wait a minute. No, it's dash 1.
There is a dash 1, and.
You have to move dash 1 first, or first and then 1.
It would be better if we talked about the dash 1 amendments.
I'd like to erase everything that's been
said. Okay, thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I move dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2372. Councilor Kelly Wirth.
And thank you, Kelly.
Right. So you, I, I take it, Representative, you have pulled your motion from the table, correct?
I did. I erased it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, which motion?
That was to adopt the dash 2.
Right. Now then, we also have a motion on the table to adopt the dash 1s.
Okay.
Because I already moved the others. Ah.
Mr. Chair, does the committee wish to discuss the dashes, the two dashes?
The committee wishes to discuss the dash 1 first, and then we'll move on to the dash 2.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, would you like to hold off on any current motion prior to the discussion of the different amendments? Or because from a technical standpoint, Mr. Chair, you have an amendment, a motion for an amendment on the table. And that motion on the amendment is the dash 1 amendments.
Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to, Representative Wirth, if you would pull your motion, let's talk about both of these amendments in their context first, and then we'll go into formal motions, if you would, please.
I did not have a motion.
You didn't? Representative Nelson, I'm sorry. Would you erase your motion for the dash 1?
Mr. Chair, I still wanted to move the dash 2s. Do I have to move both of them when I only wanted to move the dash 2s?
Why don't we talk about it?
Okay.
That'd be great, but you need to remove your motion for us to discuss both of them in context.
I remove my okay. motion for dash 2s and dash 1s and anything else I've ever done.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee have retracted any motion to immediately put in any amendments to the original measure. So for the chair's benefit and the committee's benefit, we are in a work session discussing House Bill 2372, and there are two proposed amendments before you, the dash 1s and the dash 2s.
Thank you, Ray. As Albly, as you are always able to bail the chair out of a jam. Representative Wirth, you have approached us with the dash 1s. What do they do?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to explain this because it's when you read the LC's wording, it doesn't sound at all like anything. And
sure.
I had Donna now proposing my amendment. So,
because the board, only because chair said to.
So now the chair's for my amendments, too. Yeah. We don't even know our names up here. So, what the dash one amendments do, it's more of a statement of an idea or endorsement of an idea. We're struggling, obviously, with this huge fiscal crisis. And part of the fiscal crisis, the element we're going to have to address at some point is that of tax expenditures. The state of Oregon has a very liberal, ample list of tax expenditures, and from a lot of people's point of view, we don't go through those and weed them out as effectively and often as we should. So following the last couple sessions, what happens is somebody comes up with a list of their priorities and foists it upon others and says, well, all us environmentalists think you should get rid of all the economic development ones and vice versa, and it's not going to go anywhere. So what my bill does, and what my dash ones do, is it proposes, because I was very, very swayed by the argument from the forestry community that this environmentally sensitive logging equipment tax expenditure is very important. This is, it's one of, if not the most important to the forestry industry. So what this dash one does is, and I was also swayed by the argument of parity between the ag and forestry communities. So what the dash one does is says immediately upon passage of this bill to eliminate the sunset of the exemption, right, that immediately upon passage, then another tax expenditure in the ag and natural resources area sunsets immediately. And I picked one at random because, again, my priorities are not coming from the same perspective as someone in the ag and natural resources business. So it was one that we passed last session for food processors. So what I'm proposing this as an endorsement of an idea, so that I'm not putting my priorities on you. If if an industry comes up for to a committee with a new tax expenditure or expansion of an existing one, then it would be helpful if you proposed then to us elimination of an existing tax expenditure within your same area of interest that is not as effective. And that way, then we're not putting each other's priorities on one another. So, again, this probably is not the best tax expenditure, not one that the industry would pick, but I'm proposing it as a better way, a more effective way at getting at whittling down these tax expenditures. So, in a nutshell, that's what these sessions
are. In a nutshell.
Okay. So, in a nutshell, members, how do you feel about that?
I'm confused. Could you explain it again?
Second time, Patsy.
Could I, Mr. Chair?
No. Yes.
Do we need a motion to discuss the motion?
There's no motion.
No, we're in informal discussions in public, on the record.
Okay. Well, my comment is, I probably would support this for my colleague today. Because I think these are conversations that we really need to start having. I'm not sure I picked this particular one or any. I just think we need to start looking at where we're giving money away.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gilman.
I will not be supporting the amendments. I agree that perhaps we should look at some of our tax rebates and incentives that we have. But I'm not sure that this is the proper way to do it. And your question is probably going to be then, what is the proper way? And I haven't formulated that yet, but I'm working on it.
Okay.
Representative Hunt.
I think Representative Worth is onto something from a conceptual standpoint in terms of, especially, I guess I see it more for new tax credits or exemptions that would come before us. Because every time we add a new tax credit or exemption, we're reducing revenue available that we have for education, health care, public safety, any other program. So I think trying to look at that much as we would a real dollar expenditure is a good idea in terms of replacement. I have some concerns in terms of this particular provision because it's not, you know, it's not coming as part of a discussion of intentionally saying here's one that is good and here's one that may be good but is not as a high priority. And I guess I would encourage us to figure out some way to adopt a process, especially as we're looking at new tax credits and new exemptions, to figure out how can we force ourselves, because we've got over $7 billion of tax credits every biennium right now, which is, it's just amazing looking at that report. I guess I would encourage us as a committee or even advancing up through our leadership to figure out some way, especially as we're looking at new credits and exemptions, to hold ourselves accountable for prioritizing, which I think is what Oregonians want.
Okay. Thank you. So how do you feel about the amendment?
Having had an opportunity to look at some of the benefits of what that other tax credit is, I have some concerns because I think you can make a very strong case that that is a... That is a very valid tax credit. So I have some concerns, us just kind of saying, because I agree with the principle, I think we should adopt it, but, and I think Representative Worth has been the first one to acknowledge that this is not, she didn't go through an exhaustive process of saying this one is less important than this one. So I do have some concerns about specifically targeting and deleting another tax credit that we haven't gone through the process of fully working on.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, you know, to me, a number one's number one, and that's pretty profound. And, you know, economic development is the key to funding everything, you know, that... we need to do, along with those businesses and industries that are already, you know, producing substantial income to the state. And my philosophy is, if If we don't help our businesses and our industries, who will? So as much as respect as I have for Representative Worth and appreciate all that she does, I will just have to wait and go for two. I'm sorry, but I still love you.
President Smith, anything to add?
No, I just... The nature of the bill is that we're trying to promote environmentally sensitive logging equipment, so I would be a no on that.
Thank you. Well, in light of the fact that we just had another food processor shut down a facility, Smucker's in Woodburn, I suppose we could, if we took all of the food processing tax credits away, then we probably would lose the rest of them, and that wouldn't be a good thing, in my opinion, especially with the minimum wage increase that's clearly impacting that issue. It's another issue we're dealing with. However, that really is not germane to the subject that we have, and I do appreciate your thoughts. And I tend to agree with Representative Hunt that I think this is maybe a larger policy discussion to have in the entire body and certainly amongst leadership, if especially for new tax credits, if you're wanting to institute those. I happen to be a big believer in tax credits because it's, in my opinion, it's great to dangle the carrot as opposed to hammer someone with the hammer. So I favor that approach personally. But as chair of a committee, I would ask, is, since it doesn't sound like there's a great deal of support, Representative, that it's your right and desire to make a motion to adopt the amendment or not.
Can I how about if I just say one more statement and then...
Certainly welcome to, Representative.
Okay. So I guess I'm using this committee as probably a sounding board, but I think it's caught on. You've all understood it. But the idea that I maybe didn't get across, the important part of this is that it's not me imposing my priorities on your tax credits. It's you're asking the industry to come forward and propose immediately sunsetting a tax credit or tax expenditure within their area of interest while proposing a new tax credit or a new tax expenditure. So it's, you know, the people in the industry then prioritizing the tax. So you can come and say, okay, we want an environmentally sensitive logging equipment and get rid of the working family child care tax credit. You know, it's got to be within your same area of interest so that then people are not imposing their priorities of tax expenditures on you. People in the industry know what tax expenditures work best and which are most effective, and we can't have everything. So that's what the point I want to get across, and I will not make a motion to, as long as I have the bully pulpit, I'm happy.
And Representative, you do and you have.
Okay.
So Representative Nelson, since it doesn't appear that the dash ones will be brought forward, in the chronological order, the chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, number two is always two, and I move dash two amendments to House Bill 2372.
Okay. Members, it has been...
Move the amendment into the bill because then you take away the
right. Okay, members, it has been moved. We adopt the dash twos for House Bill 2372. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Yes, Representative Byer.
Thank you again.
Very good. Very good. And the chair also would like to thank all the individuals for trying to solve that issue. Is there any objection to the dash twos? Hearing none, so adopted. Chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2372, unless I've done something wrong, to the
Representative
to pass
Representative, actually, before you go that far, and talking about love, Representative, we love you.
Okay.
We need to, since we no longer have a revenue impact, there's no need to pass the bill to the ways in, or the referral revenue committee. So we need a motion to remove the subsequent referral to revenue.
Could Representative Gilman do that?
Representative Gilman would be honored to do that, wouldn't he?
I move that we remove the subsequent referral of House Bill 2372 to revenue.
Somewhere. All right. Any. Any discussion? Hearing none, any objection?
No.
Thank you. All right. Now, folks, it ain't pretty, but we have a lot of fun. Representative Nelson.
For the good times, I move House Bill 2372 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
As amended.
Any discussion, members? Representative, yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the supporters or proponents of this bill, and you did a lot of work and really made sure that all our concerns were addressed. And I will be voting in support of this today. But however, I am going to probably not vote for any more new tax credits or tax expenditures or expansions of new ones until we do get some trade-off with the existing tax expenditures. But I felt, you know, very, very strongly that the argument was made and supported that this was a tax expenditure that would very much help our forestry industry. So I would leave one in for.
Anything further? Chair would like to say that I think it is an appropriate direction that we have taken in this regard for the long term. If we feel that it is important that we ask industry to utilize more environmentally sensitive logging techniques, then we should help them achieve that goal, because it is ultimately for the greater good, and I think that is entirely fitting and proper. So, hearing no further discussion, is there any objection to adopting House Bill, actually, sending House Bill 2372 to the floor with a due pass with a subsequent referral recension? Hearing none? So ordered.
I'm about to carry this.
And I think that Representative Nelson would especially like to carry this particular piece of legislation. Thank you very much. Work session of House Bill 2372 is hereby closed, and we're going to open up. And members, the last thing we're going to do. Oh, Senator Atkinson is here. Very good. We're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 2A. Senator Atkinson, please come forward, please. And, Senator, forgive me for leaving, but I have to go testify next door. I'll be right back. We'll leave the chair and the gavel in the hands of Representative Gilman.
Thank you. Mr.
Welcome, Senator.
Thank you very much, Chair Gilman and members of the committee. For the record, Jason Atkinson representing Southern Oregon, and I bring to you today this memorial, and I could not be more pleased after the last 10 minutes that I have no amendments to offer.
Me either.
I do thank the committee, particularly for moving this up in the agenda, and not only today, but also I think in terms of I know we're all under crunch time over the next month, and there's a real specific reason and kind of a heavier tone I have with regard to this memorial. In the district that I represent, I have one of the last great family-owned sawmills, Rough and Ready, in Cave Junction, that is about to lay off all those who work there. And we have been scrambling in my office and several other around the building, and the governor's staff has been helpful to some extent to do everything we can to save this mill. And this mill in Cave Junction it's tragic on a lot of levels. I mean, some of there's people there who have worked their entire career from the time they graduated from high school and raised their family on the wages that were provided as a result of that mill. Right across the street is the Biscuit Fire. Right across the street, timber is laying on the ground that could be put through that mill to save those jobs. And so it is with a heavy heart and a thankful one that I allow you to bring this, to move this up on the calendar, because everything we can do, time is ticking, and if we can move quicker, the better. And so you will see some language in Senate Joint Memorial 2 that addresses salvage. There's some other efforts that are being made also on the federal level, certainly, but this is going forward at least as a statement on behalf of the Oregon Legislature, Senate, and House to where we stand with regards to these jobs. Let me also say that over my time serving in this body and also in the Senate, I haven't always had the greatest of confidence in memorials. But I do have the greatest of confidence in this particular memorial, and the reason is that this issue is not only being debated this week, I believe, in the United States Congress, but it is also very much on the front burner with the Bush administration. If you recall, this particular measure, memorial, outlines the Biscuit Fire. The Biscuit Fire was, I believe, the nation's largest fire. Current estimates are that the costs of fighting that fire are now over $150 million. And that fire, as did all of the West, which was on fire last summer, but that fire in particular caught the attention of the White House, and the Bush administration came to my district to tour a fire that was just actually behind my house, about 9 miles, and lay out what is called a Healthy Forest Initiative. The Healthy Forest Initiative is important to Oregonians, politics aside, because it's going to hopefully allow the federal government to manage federal lands in such a way that they do not threaten state or state-held private or private lands within Oregon that could be threatened by mismanagement of federal lands. So that is also in the bill. There's two other main reasons of the bill, and even though I prepared remarks for you, I'm going in reverse order. So I'm building up to, I think, what is most important, second to the jobs. But there's also language in there about smoke jumpers. I have a map. You don't have anywhere where I could hang this map. I'd be more than happy to show you. But the smoke jumper base was pulled out. It's not that. You're stressed for time, and we don't need to do that. But the smoke jumpers was an area, was a service that was based in the Illinois Valley, that when a fire would break out, these people, smoke jumpers, were dropped in to fight fires aggressively first by air, parachute in, and fight fires in very remote areas. Where I represent and what is my border in Northern California is some of the most remote wilderness areas remaining in the West Coast. The Marble Mountain Wilderness area in Northern California is serviced by tanker bases in Jackson County and also smoke jumper bases that have been removed. The Rogue River Canyon and the wilderness area right adjacent to the Biscuit Fire, which now looks like a moonscape, are all areas that were fought as a result of smoke jumpers, which are now pulled out. And it might also interest you to know one final thought. The fire that began as a Biscuit Fire probably could have been put out. Of course, hindsight is 20/20, but it probably could have been put out by an effective smoke jumper team, or at least an early raid by one of our bombers that was in the air but was sent to another fire. And as you know, Biscuit Fire was two fires that grew together and became this uncontrollable fire. Let me now switch to perhaps the most important, second, of course, to the jobs, but the most important part of the memorial. And this is something that we've really had to learn the hard way here in Oregon. And in the Senate, we've spent particular long attention to why is it this way? Why does the state of Oregon fight fires differently than the federal government? Our Department of Forestry in Oregon did a magnificent job last year. There, I think, if you've ever spent time in fire camp, if you've ever spent time around some of the people who have lost land or have fought our fires, it was brought out so beautifully in our committee. There's an emotional connection to the land. And there's an emotional connection to fighting our fires and putting them out. And so that's an incentive that we have. The federal level, it's not necessarily that. The federal priorities are arranged to fight fires on basis of not getting sued, which is the first and foremost priority. And also you have essentially professional firefighters brought in on federal contract that move around the country. Firefighters from Texas, New Mexico, Utah, eventually getting to Oregon. At one point in the Biscuit Fire, we actually had firefighters from Australia here. Now, I am not pointing any fingers, but it doesn't take too much to think if you're being paid double overtime and hazard pay, what is your incentive to get that fire put out? Now, I don't want to go revisit all that, but we certainly have a different way of fighting fires here in Oregon. In Oregon, our priority is human life, the forest resource, and then structure. That's what we're going to protect. Those are the three priorities. We're going to make sure the human life is protected, then we're going to put the forest fire out, and then thirdly is going to be structure. At the federal level, it's not the same. It is human life, structure, and then the forest resource. So let it burn. And so what you saw with the Biscuit Fire is you saw a not exactly responsive federal government move in. And let me also just stop for just a second and say that we have some terrific people, many close friends of my wife and I, who work for the federal government and the United States Forest Service, who are ready to go, who couldn't move because they were bogged down from up from Washington, D.C. Notwithstanding that, you had the ability to let the forest fire burn and protect structures, and it burned out of control. And that's essentially what you have. So if you look through the memorial urges the United States Congress and also the White House to reprioritize how the United States Forest Service fights fires on federal land before it gets out of control, costs us resources, and also damages land that is controlled by the Department of Forestry and also private lands. With that, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. I've hit you with four main points that I feel very strongly about. And again, I think this is going to be received well. It is already proven to be on the front burner, at least at the White House level. And I know that there's advocates like me also at the United States Congress level pushing. And anything you could all do to help us get some of these logs into that mill to keep some people working in my district would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Senator. It's great to see that you still haven't lost the knack of talking the entire time that I was gone.
Certainly.
Really good idea, in my opinion, and I appreciate the sentiments for bringing it forward because, frankly, the issue impacts my district in many places, the same as it does yours. Questions? Representative Nelson.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Atkinson, thank you for being here. I bet those Texas firefighters were good, though.
Is that a question?
No, sir. And I think helicopters probably could have put that fire out immediately.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, in my district are two of the three largest helicopter contractors that do firefighting, and we had a lot of difficulty getting those contractors through the federal process to fight fires in our own backyard.
I understand that, so I'm just putting a plug in for your bill. And,
thank you.
And I think it's very important. And I'm just, sad that, you know, we get to this situation and haven't been a part of, you know, fighting fires for almost 30 years now around the world. I sure empathize, and it's amazing that often our federal policies can supersede practical policies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would add on to that. You know, just one more time to reiterate, there are some fine people who work for the federal government in my district that want to do the right thing, and they get caught. And there is also, I think, and Representative Gilman can attest, some of the finest people in America live in my part of the world. We had these fires break out. Oh, I should back up. We had a huge family-to-family problem in Klamath Falls. And there was several organized food drives that went and collected food and got them to families in need as a result of the water crisis. Those people got together during the fire and started to take care of the firefighters. And we organized something similar, and believe it or not, we bought, my community bought every clean pair of socks in Jackson and Josephine County and distributed free to the fire camps. And there was this huge community outreach to people who were helping fight our fires. I mean, you may think that may not be that important, but if you've worked a fire line for 20 hours and you're not going to get clean socks for 4 days, that was a big deal. And my office worked very hard to organize places for people whose livestock was being threatened, and it was neighbor to neighbor helping move livestock and move kids and the Red Cross and relief. I mean, it was really a war zone. So we have some fine people, but I don't think we need to go through this scale of tragedy one more time before we figure it out that we can do better.
Follow up, Mr.
Yes.
Do you have any idea of the volume, how many million board feet of timber there are to harvest and get going, and what the value is?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not have that number. That number is being debated considerably, and I'm sure there's somebody probably in back nodding who does. I do know that it's not that we are suggesting by any means strip lobbying or doing anything that would be detrimental to the environment or erosion control. The conservative estimates would dictate that we could keep the mill open, and that's what I'm interested in. And I would also say that the variety of trees that are down would require us to act right now.
They would what?
Requires us to act now, because they probably will not be of any value in the near future.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I guess I have to wait till work session. I was just going to say, did not we already pass the bill to move to harvest this timber right now, previously in this committee?
No, Representative, we hadn't. That's a bill that's on the agenda today, House Bill 2344, which directs state agencies to begin. That is a slightly different matter, although it's the same subject, obviously. But this is a memorial to Congress urging them to move forward as quickly as possible for all the reasons that we know exist and that Senator Atkinson has just so aptly made. The quality of this timber will degrade very quickly if something isn't done.
Oh, yeah.
I think, Senator, we did some preliminary last year board feet, just in the dark guesses, conservatively a couple of billion board feet that would be salvageable. In the area that is exclusive of, in other words, not talking about the 180,000 acres of wilderness, if you took all of that out, there's easily 2 billion board feet in what's left in 320,000 acres. It is difficult, some of that terrain, as you well know, to get some of that equipment or to get some of that logging. All right. Well, thank you very much. Representative Smith.
I have a quick question for the senator. Thank you for bringing this. You talked about the rough and ready mills. Mm-hmm. How many jobs are we talking?
Over three, Mr. Chair, Representative, over 300 at this point. I mean, you know, certainly there's some flexibility when you're at full capacity or not, but I'd say the number that I am most familiar with, right around 300. It's the number one biggest employer in the valley. It brings $5 million into the local economy. And if it's gone, that's, you know, this. Mr. Chair, if I elaborate just for 30 more seconds, this particular strip of highway that runs through the Illinois Valley was locked off essentially from road construction between with Caltrans and our department, and it's the only way to get to the South Coast. And it was this previous summer, it was not very accessible, and so we had a lot of businesses that rely on tourism and a lot of people that rely on some destination visits to Oregon Caves and some of that part of the region's wineries essentially took a big hit. then the next, last summer, the next summer was the Biscuit Fire, and which, in all reality, really could finish off the community, which is really, I mean, it's just one thing and then another.
I have a question.
Yes.
Then, if you lost the 300 jobs, I assume you'd lose your schools, too, because you'd lose them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, it would be a great damage to the schools and the infrastructure, but that's a part of Oregon that is really the agriculture there outside of timber is really going through a large change. Another large manufacturer who actually developed out of the mill, which builds Krauskraft, which builds these playgrounds, has already I don't know if they have already moved, but they've discussed moving northern part of the county. It'd be a big impact.
Senator, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Is there anyone else signed up to do? Okay. Chair would like to call Ralph Saperstein, please. Welcome, Ralph.
Thank you, Ann.
Good to have you here. I think it's my first opportunity to put you in the hot seat.
I'm glad for the opportunity to testify on this, even though I signed up by mistake. My name is Ralph Saperstein. I represent Boise Cascade Corporation. And as I was signing up, I was reading the chair's admonition about signing and agreeing to tell the truth. And I absolutely always do, and that was no problem. But then down below, it says print legibly. Well, signing my name and print legibly aren't the same thing. And so here I am. We are, Boise is sincerely appreciative of Senator Atkinson's effort on this memorial. We have 600,000 acres of forest land in Oregon, and last summer we lost 10,000 acres to a fire, and those acres that burned had trees that were anywhere 25 to 30 years old, and they had little or no value, and so we just have to start over growing those trees again. So forest fires are very important to us, and it looks like 2003 is going to be another bad year, possibly even worse. We think that your role in adequately funding the forest fire efforts through the Department of Forestry is critical, and even though we're concerned about things for lives and things like that, the war in Iraq is going to have a role in our ability to fight forest fires next summer, because our National Guard, which has been called up to a higher percentage than most other states, those are the folks and the equipment that we rely on in the summertime to fight forest fires on state-protected lands. So we urge you to pass this memorial. We think it's very important and sincerely appreciate the Senator's efforts.
Thank you, Ralph. Questions? Hearing none, appreciate you coming forward, even if you did sign up for the wrong bill. But I'll be happy to call you back on another bill at some other time. All right, anyone else here to testify on SJM 2A? Hearing none, we're going to close a public hearing on SGM 2A and open a work session on SGM 2A.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Nelson.
You know, I'm not sure how you move an amendment to a Senate joint memorial.
Well, you cannot do it. You cannot do it as a conceptual amendment in committee. We actually have another bill, which is yours, which we'll be hearing here shortly, which really covers some of the same territory, and would ask that perhaps you consider using that as your vehicle for your concept, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Joint Memorial 2 as amended to the House floor with an absolute due pass recommendation.
Yeah.
I have to move.
You're fine, Representative. House Senate Joint Memorial 2A is members, it has been moved that we pass it to the floor with a do pass recommendation discussion. Adopt it, not pass it. Adopt it.
Adopt it.
Hearing none, any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. I'm going to close the work session on SGM 2A, and we will we'll Representative Nelson, would you like to carry this? Actually, Representative Gilman, I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Why?
She's Southern Oregon.
Well, it's sort of his neck of the woods, Representative. Thank you. So shall it be. All right. And since we're talking about this particular subject, we're going to open a public hearing on HJM 6. Representative, if you would like.
I would.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome, Representative.
Thank
you. Tell us what this House Joint Memorial 6 is all about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. State Representative Donna Nelson from House District 24, beautiful Willamette Valley. Chair Krupp and distinguished committee members, thank you for this opportunity to appear before you today to speak to the need for House Joint Memorial 6. As you know, Oregon encompasses over 16 million acres of public forest lands, representing nearly 60% of land in the state capable of producing commercial timber. Just over 12 million of these acres are federally owned. Nearly 1 million acres are owned by cities, counties, or the state. Almost 4 million acres are set aside for parks or reserves. The scope of our forest lands, their broad uses, and importance to Oregon's economy make a responsible forest plan essential to the proper management of these lands. Forest products are a highly and important sustainable natural resource. The original implementation of the Northwest Forest Plan in 1994 recognized this fact. Since that time, the plan has had some success in protecting and enhancing the long-term health of forests, streams, and wildlife, while also producing a sustainable supply of forest products, recreation, and other services. However, the plan's success has been limited and plagued with procedural roadblocks, legal challenges, and high expenses. The Northwest Forest Plan was originally implemented to end the federal forest management gridlock in Oregon. The plan was intended to reconcile socioeconomic benefits to rural communities from federal timber harvests while protecting threatened, endangered, and sensitive species characteristically found in the late successional forest ecosystems. It is the only practical solution offered to date to resolve the federal forest controversy in the Northwest. But the United States Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management generally have not used the management flexibility that is built into the plan to address site-specific issues and other more restrictive management allocations. Additionally, the 80 to 90% reduction in federal timber harvest in Oregon has had global consequences, such as increased timber harvests in other areas of the nation and the developing world in order to meet the steadily increasing demand for wood products in this country. Much of the federal forest land in Oregon is in poor health, largely due to human-caused disturbances like wildfire, suppression, and introduction of invasive non-native plant and animal species, and air pollution. Land management activities such as livestock grazing,
Timber harvesting, road building, land clearing, and burning for agriculture and urban use have also taken a toll. While the precipitous decline in federal funding for forest management in Oregon is factored in, the need for active federal management is readily apparent. The federal government has published self-audit reports that advocate changes to the plan and its implementation to bring it in line with the most recent advances in scientific research. The passage of House Joint Memorial 6 will let Congress know that we support the principles of the Northwest Forest Plan and the full implementation of this hard-fought political compromise to reconcile socioeconomic needs with protection of forest ecosystems and protection of wildlife. House Joint Memorial 6 will also urge Congress to fully implement the Northwest Forest Plan with appropriate revisions by fully funding the program, seeking administrative efficiency, and making necessary statutory revisions. I thank you for your consideration. Top priority in our state at this time is providing jobs. This is one substantial rebirthing of one of the basic industries of our state, fishing, forestry, and farming. We need this effort immediately. Thank you very much for this time, and there are others here that are far more knowledgeable in this area who will be testifying.
Thank you, Representative. Timely and appropriate, in my opinion. I appreciate you bringing this forward. Chair would like to call Ted Lawrenson from the Oregon Department of Forestry, please. It's you. Mine's on vibrate, Ray. Welcome, Ted, for the record.
Chair Krupp and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ted Lawrenson. I'm Assistant State Forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. We appreciate the effort that Representative Nelson's made to raise this important issue. The memorial basically promotes positions the Department of Forestry advocated for a number of years, and certainly the governor's office as well. I think some context for the memorial is important. The representative made the notion that 57% of Oregon's forest land in Oregon is federal. But in the context of the planned harvest, it's about a billion board feet. That's based upon both the Northwest Forest Plan, which deals with Western Oregon, and plans for Eastern Oregon. The volume of timber harvested during 2001 from federal lands was 173 million board feet, so about 17% of the planned harvest. The growth rate in terms of federal lands that are planned for harvest as compared to what's being harvested, as compared to what's being grown, is about 12 to 1. So about 12 times the volume of timber growing on federal lands that are planned for harvest and that is being harvested. In comparison to the federal lands harvest, the 57% of the land that provided 173 million board feet, state-owned lands comprise 3% of the total forest land. The timber harvested in 2001 from that 3% was 268 million board feet. So the 3% of the lands that are state-owned land produce more harvest than the federal lands. It might be noteworthy to make the point that on state-owned lands, we're growing about three times the volume of timber that we're harvesting, and we will increase harvest over time as that timber ages.
Ted, quick question before you go any further. Is that an apples-to-apples comparison with federal land? In other words, do you have state lands that have the same endangered species restrictions on them that we do with private lands, or with federal lands?
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, actually, it's close to apples, and apples is probably apples and quince. The federal lands have different process standards in terms of what they've got to do for the ESA, but the Northwest Forest Plan is clearly designed to get past that. So in that context, I think it's fair to say that what's planned on the federal lands is a billion board feet, and that does reflect those ESA considerations. On state-owned lands, we have to avoid take, and we do that, and we have similar lands that are encumbered in terms of the, both owls and marbled murrelets and other species. So we do have to make those considerations. Do have a chart on the back of this that kind of shows the proportionality test, looks at the proportion of lands that are federal versus their contribution in 2001 to the timber harvest levels. And if everything was contributing equally, the bars would be equal by owner. As you can see, the federal lands have very small contribution in terms of the timber harvest. Again, the Northwest Plan was designed to provide a balance, and getting to that level of promise is pretty important, and we support this memorial.
Okay, thank you. Members, questions for Ted? Yes, Representative.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, thank you, Ted. Do we have any idea that if we were at full scope, I don't know, maybe you have the history, at one time in our great state, how many were employed in the forestry industry compared to today? Does anybody have those numbers?
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, I can get those data for you. It's fair to say that the number of jobs in the forest products industry has declined. It has not been proportional to the actual decline in harvest because due to a number of factors, the employment stayed higher than we might have otherwise expected. It would have been proportional. There's a number of reasons for that in terms of secondary products and that kind of stuff. But there has been a reduction in timber employment, particularly in the rural communities. It's been quite substantial. There are a number of economic studies out that get to what have been the impacts on the forest economy, local economies, with the changes in the Northwest Forest Plan. Actually, I provided Chair Krupp a recent study that was sponsored by the states of Idaho, Montana, Washington, and Oregon that looks at the inland areas and talks about the job impacts. And my impression is that at least in terms of the rural communities, the economic impacts are probably greater than people sometimes perceive.
Just one last question. While we anticipated in the last legislative session that we were not well enough funded for fighting forest fires, I mean, just moving ahead with, you know, taking out this timber that's down and moving on right now rather than having a, you know, a wait till January of 2004. I mean, first of all, prevent the extra cost. Seems so prudent. And why does it take so long to make something like that happen that is so prudent and right, besides not losing 70% of the value while it's laying there rotting?
Chair Krupp, Representative Nelson, members of the committee, clearly on federal lands there are process issues that they've got to deal with that are important in terms of the compromise that has been reached as well. So while we generally agree with your statement, it's also important that public processes be provided as well. That being said, the Biscuit Fire analysis has just been completed and it's out, so there are very specific data on what volumes of salvage material are available. There's a number of assumptions they've applied in terms of what sort of management allocations are available for harvest, what lands would be harvestable in the context of access. They have summaries in terms of the infrastructure that was impacted by the fire. So that provides a really good case study looking at the potential salvage and other impacts in terms of the trade-offs with the environmental factors and the economic factors. One of the conclusions of the Biscuit Fire study is that those lands will be at a higher risk of reburn for some time. There's a number of reasons for that. In some cases, the timber salvage could improve that. In other cases, it may not. Those lands are something that we're going to have to think about in terms of managing that higher risk for some time. And to put that in context, the Biscuit Fire burned a little less than 500,000 acres. Of that, only a little over 1,000 acres were not federal. So it was almost totally federal land that burned. But there are some real trade-offs, and economically, there are a number of those lands that are close to a road that can be salvaged rather rapidly, and there's other acres there that would have a very difficult time being harvested economically. The general decay rate for Douglas fir in that kind of environment is going to be about 20% the first year. Then it begins to increase in terms of loss after that point in time. For other species, it will tend to be somewhat higher, particularly for hardwoods and that sort of thing. So the dominant species of Douglas fir, about 20% the first year, and then somewhat higher rate of decay after that.
Okay. And, Ted, I've got a couple of quick questions for you. In referencing your testimony, first page, last paragraph, talking about major revisions to the survey and manage program that has held up so many projects in the plan area. What is that, and why does it hold up projects?
Well, basically, when the plan was put together, there was an agreement to develop process to address species that are outside the context of particularly listed species, but may be critical or indicator species. There was a requirement for the Forest Service and be able to go through given planned sales and look for certain species and identify those, and if they were identified and found, then the plan would have to be modified accordingly. There's a huge list of those, and the survey protocol to find them wasn't well developed, and basically the Forest Service got wrapped around their axle. And how do you look for some of these things that are rare to begin with? And if you don't find them, does that mean they're not there? If you do find them, does it mean they're at risk? And so it's been a real process problem. It's intended to address a legitimate problem of there are things that we, from an ecosystem perspective, that are relatively rare in the environment that we need to look for. But again, the methods to achieve those outputs and planning processes haven't worked very well.
You assert in your last sentence that the administration has proposed several rulemaking changes to expedite forest planning. I'm assuming they've published those. What are the most important of those in your mind as a state forester?
Chair, a couple members of the committee, they do have those rules published now. We are in process actually preparing comments.
Okay.
They deal with both process and methods, and I can get you both the set of rules and our draft comments on it. We've not yet finalized those, but they are in process.
Okay, I would appreciate that. And also for the members of the committee, if you could provide that. And additionally, also provide us with the study that just came out on the Biscuit Fire. Is my 2 billion board feet anywhere in the ballpark?
Chair, members of the committee, it is in the ballpark. And actually what we've done, we've taken the Biscuit Fire analysis and then applied proportionately some of the results of that to the broader fire acres that were burned in additional federal fires to figure out what the total might be, and it's fair to say that your $2 billion figure for all the fires that burn on federal land is pretty close, and again, that's based upon some assumption in terms of what would be operable in terms of economics and administrative processes. So it's probably a pretty good ballpark figure. We did then, based upon assumptions of stumpage, calculated revenue value in terms of the federal government as well. So you'll have those data within the week.
Well, it would be nice if we could get the federal government to give us some of that stumpage feedback to our counties once again and our school districts like we used to get. It's a very, very different formula today than it used to be in that regard. So thank you very much and appreciate that. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. You're really watching out for me today, Mr. Vice Chair. I appreciate that. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I might, two questions. First of all, not being an expert on the Northwest Forest Plan, is the 1 billion board feet off of federal lands, is that intended to be a long-term sustainable recommendation that if we take that kind of volume of board
feet, Chair Creppen, Representative Hunt, members of the committee, that is, but that includes both the lands that are in the Northwest Forest Plan, which is Western Oregon, and the lands in Eastern Oregon as well. So that would be the total.
The entire state.
Entire state, okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right. You mentioned the last paragraph on the second page of your testimony about encouraging some language to the administration and Congress to take additional action to address forest health concerns. Have you drafted some language, or I guess I just have a question that maybe that's for you, Mr. Chair, or or Representative Nelson or for you in terms of, is that some language that we have access to or is in process?
Chair Krupp, Representative Hunt, members of the committee, I think Representative Nelson may be getting to that in amendments, but the findings, I think, that you have in the memorial get to some sort of a statement possibly on forest health concerns in addition to just the plan itself, and that may be wise. I think the representative has baked you a beautiful cake and are ready to serve a slice of it to anybody that wants it, but again, I think some frosting could be put on that cake and be a little more tasty.
I've always liked frosting.
That's my favorite, I guess. So that's kind of where we're coming from. We're very satisfied with the cake that she's baked, but if she'd want to put more frosting on it, we'd be happy to help her whip that frosting up and slide it on the cake.
And you know, Representative, that actually gives me a bit of an idea. You know, if you want to amend this bill, that's great. And when we go to pass it out, maybe you bring us a nice big cake with frosting on it. Make sure that Ted's here. And
I certainly would just be honored.
Maybe a cake in the shape of a Douglas fir tree or
the state of Oregon.
Or the state of Oregon, maybe, with trees on it, something like that.
You got it.
See, folks, not only are we not pretty, but we also come up with some strange suggestions. But we do have fun.
Need something to break stress.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Any additional questions? Ted, thanks for being the perfect foil. Appreciate that. Chair, I'd like to call Ralph Saperstein. And Ralph, I'm assuming this is the correct bill you were here to testify. No, this isn't even it either. Okay. Well, look, we've only got so many bills left, Ralph.
Yeah, clarify things that the confusion wasn't over the bill, it was over that. Signing your name in print legible.
Ah,
that was the confusion. Ralph Saperstein, Boise Cascade Corporation. This is sort of a me too. I support Representative Nelson's excellent statement and what Ted Lawrenson said, and so I'd just like to add my name. As far as Representative Hunt's question about what geographic area and whether this was sustainable, because I'm so old, I can add this perspective that the historical harvest and basically the same geographic area was on the nature of 4.5 billion board feet. The biological potential of these lands is over 5 billion board feet. So this plan that they have not been able to meet the targets on was 1 billion. So it's 20% of the biological potential, and they sold 17% last year. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Nelson.
Thank you very much. Ralph is here. Did you work on this plan?
Actually, that's the amazing thing is that I came here to endorse your statement in support of endorsing the plan, and while I was employed, I was working against the plan. In fact, I helped file a lawsuit to challenge the plan because we thought it was horrific that they would drop the allowable sale quantity by 80%. So it would be hard to say I worked for the plan.
Well, Mr. Chair, follow up.
Yes.
Just quickly, well, I can make an amendment to bring it back up to four.
Well, no, it just shows how bad things have gotten when that now we're supporting the plan.
Yes, and thank you.
Yes.
So basically, Ralph, one could reach the conclusion, for the record, that if the historical harvest levels statewide were somewhere in the 4.5 billion board feet range, and we're only processing 173 million board feet, that the current policy, although well intended, has clearly not worked to even approach anything even near the 1 billion board feet,
which is 80% less than the historical average.
So if I'm understanding correctly, the government sold 17% of 20% last year, correct?
Well, I can't say correct because those were Ted's numbers that I think were based on the state of Oregon, and some of the numbers I threw out relative to the Northwest Forest Plant is an area that's not quite the state of Oregon. It includes Western Washington and Western Oregon, maybe a little bit of Northern California. But
point is basically...
It's failed.
It appears it's failed and we've locked up the forest.
It's failed miserably.
Is it your opinion that if there are revisions to the survey and management program and some of the other administration proposals to expedite the planning and project appeals, is it your opinion, having looked at those, that they will actually accomplish getting to 1 billion board feet, or can we not even get there?
And I hate to quote a member from the other side, but I think Senator Harper says something like, when pigs fly. So that's my opinion.
Point well taken. Thank you, Ralph. Yes.
I just wanted to suggest that we probably wouldn't have a school funding problem if we could do what we need to do.
Representative, I think that brings up a very good point. Even though the formula for distribution of those dollars has changed from what it used to be, it still would be very, very helpful. There's no doubt about it. Ralph, thanks. Appreciate you coming today. And thanks for clarifying the chair's misunderstanding. Anyone else like to testify on HJM 6? Hearing none, we're going to close a public hearing on HJM 6. And, Representative, were you thinking of perhaps adding some additional language?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Very good.
I've never amended a memorial before, and that's why I didn't know how you did it. I would like to propose that we amend this memorial, because I think it's so critical, and I'd love to hand deliver it myself to Washington. That the Forestry Division and Boise Cascade and whomever, Forest Industries, helped me word this properly to address the forest health concerns in eastern and southwestern Oregon, consistent with our findings of forest health. I would like to do that, but I wondered if we could go ahead and pass the bill to the House floor with the amendment added on the Senate side to expedite. I think it's so important that we move promptly.
Representative, that is entirely your choice. I'm happy to move the memorial as it sits today.
I would like very much.
You'd like to do that?
To do that.
Okay, very good. And the chair would entertain a motion.
I then move, Mr. Chair, House Joint Memorial 6.
Excuse me.
For adoption on the House floor.
We're now in work session on HJM 6. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair,
please.
I apologize. I move, I don't know what's Meredith today, the House Joint Memorial 6.
Something in the air to be adopted.
To the House floor for adoption.
All right. Members, any discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. HJM 6 is hereby adopted, and Representative Nelson, you will be the carrier. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2754. Ray, you want to tell us a little bit about what this bill does, please? 2754.
Yes, Mr. Chair, as soon as I find my folder. Here we go. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the staff measure summary you have before you is on 2574, not 2754, so you can just ignore that one, and we'll redo it for you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2754 allows soil and water conservation districts to acquire conservation easements and highway scenic preservation easements. It requires a public hearing before acquisition and allows districts to make rules regarding care, use, and management of easement. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this measure does declare an emergency and makes it effective upon passage. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ray. Chair would like to call John McDonald. John, if you're here. And John, if there's anyone else you want to bring with you, that's fine. Welcome, gentlemen, and for the record, state your name.
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, my name is John McDonald. I am the executive director of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts. I am also one of those elected district directors from now called the Tualatin Soil and Water Conservation District. It used to be Washington County. And I am a landowner who raises hazelnuts. So one place in there I've got to be able to make a living, but I'm not quite sure which one it's going to turn out to be. So it is a pleasure to be here, and I will let Mr. Tim Stieber introduce himself.
Chairman Krupp, committee. My name is Tim Stieber. I'm district manager for Yamhill Soil and Water Conservation District. And we have embarked on managing a conservation easement, so we have some of that kind of experience to relay to you today.
Okay.
Thank you. Please.
Chair Krupp and members of the committee, I want to give you some general background information and kind of a very small point rather than going into Conservation Easements 101, because there's a lot of details we could discuss. First of all, thank you for helping sponsor this bill so it comes up for testimony and for a hearing, and also for letting us come and speak to it in helping soil and water conservation districts be holders of conservation easements. What this bill does is it adds us to the list of those who already have this authority in ORS 271-715-775. There is some issue as to whether or not we already have had this authority to hold conservation easements under ORS 568-550, which was passed here back in 1939. But because there was a little bit of, shall we say, hesitation about being totally certain through the Attorney General's review and so forth, that we decided that maybe it would be best to make certain that there was no problem with this, and therefore we've come for to be added to the list in 271. The question I want to answer is, why would we want to hold a conservation easement? And I think the simple answer is because this becomes another tool for doing what we need to be doing to help conservation in the agriculture community, in the small woodlands work that we do, and also with some of the forestry communities that we work with. But we want to very much state that we are not aggressively seeking to get into the conservation easement business. It isn't suddenly going to be the new niche. It isn't the way to suddenly arrive at, you know, new funding flow or something like that. In a sense, what we are doing is we are responding to the requests that have been made to us by our customers. They came and asked us if we would consider being the holder of a conservation easement on their property. Let me elaborate a little bit on this process as to how that works. I think it's important to know how a conservation district actually goes about working with a landowner. There's several steps that I could go over quickly, and they're put on the first page of the testimony you have in front of you. And that is, you know, we look at what is a resource concern. Maybe it's an SB 1010 rule that's in, they're in violation of something. Maybe it's a simple, I want to do something right out of a personal conservation ethic. You know, I want to put in a grass waterway. I want to reduce erosion. I want to build up a wildlife habitat on my property, whatever it may be. Some of it is just to protect the business, and some of it is to stay in business. That's my real concern, is to how to keep this thing profitable enough to be able to pay the bills and stay in farming. The second thing we look at is, you know, what are the landowner's goals? And I think that's the driving force behind this. What does the landowner want to do in addressing the resource concerns, or, you know, whatever it may be? And we take into account, of course, what are the various alternatives, what are the approaches, what can be done. We go back to the books and say, well, if this is the problem, there's five different things you could do or three different things you can do that are effective. And we look at what is the best way for that particular landowner to address those needs based upon what they can afford, what equipment they have, what time they have, what they want to do with the land, what kind of crops they raise, et cetera. There's a lot of issues that go into what turns out to be the appropriate thing to do. From that, of course, we develop a plan, or we develop some kind of strategy of working with the landowner, and then after that it's, you know, how do we find the resources to do what needs to be done. It's out of that process that our interest for conservation easements arises. We're not going to go out and say, okay, we're now going to market, you know, conservation easements. But it comes from the express interest of a landowner who comes to us and says, maybe I've got a concern about my property. Maybe I have a concern about some conservation problems. Maybe I have a concern about what's going to happen to my property through my family or whatever it may be, and I'd like to put this into an easement. Up to this point, we have hesitated to do so. There's only one in the entire state where a district co-holds a conservation easement through the Yamhill SWCD and co-holds it with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. So I think it's important to realize that we're here because we're trying to respond to our customers' requests, and we're trying to provide a service which we feel is appropriate within the array of services and the array of tools, just like looking at a lot of other things that might have been done. This becomes another way to address the concerns of the landowner. Many are interested in doing so.
Excuse me, could you back up just a moment and, for the benefit of the entire committee, tell us just exactly what is a conservation easement?
A conservation easement is putting a particular restriction on a piece of property as to how it can be used.
Okay, in exchange for?
It may be in exchange for, you know, tax credit. It may be in exchange for a particular other financial benefit. It may be just they donated it and they're wanting to do something for conservation. There's a lot of different ways to do it. Agriculture conservation easements is a little more defined, and that's the one we're most interested in. And that purpose is to keep farming and ranching land in production.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, there's lots of other ways to do that. And you, as I said, if you wanted 101, there's some experts in the back of the room that could keep you here for the next 5 hours giving you detailed examples and so forth. But
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is it one important reason the water?
Chair Krupp and Representative Nelson, we feel that, you know, when we're working with a landowner and they're interested in a conservation easement or something like that, obviously we're going to address the resource concerns that are on that property. Now, if that involves water or it involves the soil or involves wildlife or whatever it is, we're going to take a look at those things, and we will want very much to have a conservation plan developed that addresses all the concerns, so that the easement might be a part of helping that those particular practices that are installed, those particular methods that are used, are maintained, so that we can maintain the quality that we've achieved through what's been done, and it would go hand in hand with the easement itself.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. For example, I'm thinking about grass in the ditches, things like that that are very important for the good water.
Chair Krupp and Representative Nelson, I happen to have two of those running straight through my property, those grass waterways that try to reduce the erosion and stuff like that. And you better believe it, if I pass this on to somebody else, including my children, I'd want those protected, maintained,
right,
for the benefit we're achieving now and for on down the road.
Okay. Please continue. Thank you.
I think the other things are probably fairly self-explanatory there on the testimony that is presented to you. We feel that we are a known, respected, and trusted group of people out there. We are elected by our constituencies, obviously, locally. We feel that conservation districts give a viable option for somebody's interested in an easement as one other person, one other entity to whom they can go to see if they can't find a holder. Some ranchers and farmers have come to us saying, I really don't want to go with federal government or state government or maybe some of the other groups. How about you guys? Can you take this on? And up to this point, we've had to say, probably not. But if the passage of this bill is, then we would be able to do so. We feel that we're protecting the public interest through, the hearings that are provided in the bill, as well as the fact that we're elected officials who make these determinations. And there's one other factor that I will address specifically, and that is I can't stand in front of you and say every single one of the 45 conservation districts out there is ready to go. They're totally educated, completely trained. They've got all the paperwork done. They've got all the forms ready to be signed and so forth. We're not there yet. But we've already recognized the need of what we need to do, and we've requested ODA's assistance to put together that kind of training, put together those templates, so that when we do get out there, we know what we're talking about. We're giving the proper kinds of accurate information to people, customers, when they ask us, and we're able to give the advice that they trust us to give. And at that, I would close my comments if there are any questions.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Yes, briefly,
I'm assuming that when this is, easement is set up in this way, this would minimize costs with the death of the landowner. I'm just in here, I'm trying to, I mean, I think individuals who do give their land in this way really are angels. And but there ought to be some benefit that, you know, they don't end up in a huge controversy over who gets this land when Grandpa's gone.
Yeah, Chair Crippen, Representative Nielsen, there are a number of tax estate planning and land transfer benefits that come with having a conservation easement. Yes, ma'am.
Representative Wirth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, as I'm reading this, if we do add soil and water conservation districts to the definition of holder, they would be the only bodies that would be eligible to hold a conservation district that are not public owned. These soil and water conservation districts would be the only holders that would be private.
Chair Krupp and Representative Wirth, we are public.
You're a public body.
We are a local government. We're a subdivision of state government. We are, by certain definitions, a municipality. We are a special district. We are a type of government, but it's just kind of different from any other government around.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair. I guess I meant, you know, soil and water conservation districts are made up of landowners, as opposed to, I guess what I mean is watershed districts. So you'd be made up of landowners, you know, still a public body, but that would be a somewhat difference in my interpretation. And I'm wondering what your opinion is if we allow soil and water conservation districts, then why not watershed districts? And
Chair Krupp and Representative Wirth, a percentage of each district's members are landowners. There is also a percentage, either 2 out of 5 or 2 out of 7, who are at-large members and do not have to be landowners. Mm-hmm. They can be representative of, you know, whoever votes for them in the county. They run in a county-wide election a district-wide election. So they're not tied to that. Some of
the conservation districts are typically the landowner group, and then the watershed districts are.
It's hard to make that blanket distinction. Yes, that's generally true. You know, where there would be more emphasis on landowners being on the district boards and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of us also sit on watershed councils and a number of other councils as well. One of the difficulties with doing this with watershed councils is they may not have the legal authority to do this.
Right.
They don't have the kinds of things that go along with it. So, and we're just kind of looking for the advantage to do this because we're responding to our needs.
And then this bill also, in addition, would allow soil and water conservation districts to acquire conservation easements, but also highway scenic preservation easements. And can you tell me how that might come into play?
Representative Krupp and Representative Wirth, to tell you the truth, I haven't the foggiest idea.
Okay. I'll
say other than the fact that, I mean, we have districts right along the coasts and, you know, other areas and that do overlook highways, and a conservation easement on a landowner that's adjacent to one of these, it could be an entirely viable thing to do.
Okay, thank you.
President Nelson, another question.
Quick question. Mr. Stieber and Mr. McDonald, and thank you for being here. And do you have an estimate of, with this program in 46 districts, do you have an estimate of how much land we're talking about? You know, I'm a farmer at heart, and I don't want to lose, you know, my good farmland. So I'm just curious, productive land. I mean, are we talking about 1/10 of 100% of the land, or what's the magnitude do you have estimated as a strategy of land that might, well, it's productive. I understand it'll be in productive, other types of productive uses that's required, right, under this bill?
Mm-hmm.
I see. Okay, but as far as used actively for agriculture, you know, or hay or cattle.
Chair Krupp and Representative Nielsen,
what are we giving up? or will we?
We hope through the types of conservation easements in which we're interested that we're actually preserving land to stay in production. There are lots of different kinds of easements. I mean, there's all the way from the utility pole in your front yard to the right-of-way, you know, that you drive, you know, to get where you want to go over somebody's property, to, you know, how you can set up certain restrictions as to how a piece of property can be used. We are most interested in those that do two things. One, that do things to take care of the land and the water properly. And the second is to keep that land in production. We call those agriculture conservation easements. Those are obviously the ones that we're most likely to work with and most interested in working with, because those tend to be our customers. And they have an interest in staying in business and preserving their property in production.
And a last follow-up.
And right now, I haven't the foggiest idea exactly how many acres there are or how many interests there are, because obviously we kept this pretty quiet because we didn't want to encourage people to come rushing forward, because we didn't feel we had a vehicle that we could support it without question, and we were waiting to be able to do so through possibly the change in statute.
Well, Mr. McDonald, I just think what we've done with this family in my district, the Gundermans, is just a great tribute to this program. It's absolutely outstanding. And I just think every effort to preserve land, as you say, is a good thing. I am worried about your funding. Can we do this with the staff we have? Because, you know, you're susceptible to budget reductions like everybody else. And I want us to do this program, but only if we can afford it.
Chair Krupp and Representative Nelson, I would like to defer to a staff person who does this, has been involved with it the whole time, and happens to represent the Gunderman conservation easement and so forth. I'd like to have Mr. Steeper talk to that, please.
Great.
And before we go there, the chair would like to alert the members of the audience and the committee that we are going to finish our day's work at 3 o'clock today. Just before 3 o'clock, we will be, I'd like to have all the members of the committee here as we will be reconsidering the vote on the Bear and Cougar bill to bring that back to committee to amend it to the members' satisfaction and move forward. So we will not be hearing House Bill 2344 today. We're simply not going to have time for it. Please.
Thank you, Chairman Krupp. Thank you for the time to present here and committee members. I support what John has said, and I think I can provide a little bit more how it has been implemented at the local level. The Yamhill Soil and Water Conservation District, based out of McMinnville, believes that conservation tools can be a very valuable tool for districts in general to, and we feel that we're very uniquely positioned to help landowners. One of the reasons is we've typically, for example, the Yamhill District has been operational for almost 50 years, and we've have a lot of ties with landowners who are now looking to possibly retire and move off the land, and they have a strong tie to the land, and they'd like to try to see that they have input into the, how that land is managed. For example, the example that Representative Nelson refers, we helped establish a conservation easement on a 720-acre tract called the Crown Hill Farm. This particular farm is surrounded by small tracts now that are anywhere from 5 to 10 to 20 acres in size, and it's a very dramatic thing to have a 720-acre tract that's going to be kept as a 720-acre tract, and contained within that is several small watersheds, timber production, pastures, hayland, and the public benefits to this are open space, watershed benefits, forest land that's going to always be operated that way. As far as how this particular easement was funded, each individual easement is prepared closely with the landowner to try to build a conservation plan for a particular piece of property that will enable the easement to holder to check on that easement annually, which is required by IRS statutes. And what we have done is we have set up a special fund in the district financial budget which is only used for this particular purpose. And then we set up a payment plan with the landowner, and the district is making contributions as well, where we will bring it to a level to where it will be a sustained level to where it will be able to provide annual checkups in perpetuity. And this is how we'd approach additional easements as well. We would only take them on if we can see that we would be able to service them in the future, which is the point where you have to be able to say to the landowner, we will check up on your land 20, 30, 40 years from now to ensure that the conservation values are being upheld. As far as things that I've heard, you know, against this type of a thing is that, you know, we don't know if we want government holding easements, but soil and water conservation districts are about as local as you're going to get. The seven-member boards, some have five-member boards, but they're all elected locally and tend to be very in tune with what's going on in the local area. So they are very down to earth. In our case, the elected directors authorize us to work on that particular easement. And if it was taking too much staff time to do this, they would elect to have us not work on future ones if that was the case. We go through an annual, all districts go through an annual work plan process where they decide what do we want to do and what do we have money to do and try to come to some common ground. That's a standard thing that all districts have to do and turn it into the Department of Agriculture every year. With that, I can open it up to questions if you have any.
Yes, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Stever. So your answer to my question is yes, we do have the staff time and money to do this already within our soil and water district.
Chairman Krupp, Representative Nelson, the answer to that is yes, but we will evaluate that on an annual basis, and if we have staff time to allocate towards easements, we'll take on writing of additional ones if we are granted the authority to do so. If we found that we didn't have time because of other things that we were asked to do by the state or other things came up, we would choose not to write further easements, but we do have written in the annual work plan, and we do have a commitment to maintain the easements that we have written with an annual inspection process.
Now, the follow-up question, is this revocable?
This is a permanent easement. It is transferable, and we did have a clause which we wrote into the easement, whereas if by some large event that caused districts not to be in existence in Oregon anymore, which I don't anticipate, but if that would happen, the easement could be transferred to another land trust or similar agency that holds easements.
So it is not revocable.
Okay, Representative Gilman.
You currently have an easement that you hold in common with the Department of Agriculture. Give us an idea why that mechanism wouldn't work for other soil and water conservation districts.
Representative Krupp, or Chairman Krupp, Representative Gilman, that process would work. It would require more staff time, I believe. Any time that you have a tiered structure, you start to get into communication issues, and it's a development of an easement with landowners. It's a fairly complex document. The state would have to dedicate time to that, is my feeling.
Representative Krupp and Representative Gilman, it's my understanding that the Department of Agriculture does not want to get into the business of holding a lot of conservation easements. They did so this time because it was the only viable legal option to this particular family, and we, in a sense, persuaded them to become co-holders. It was not their intent to do so. Their intent is for us to be able to hold them, if that is the will of the legislature and so forth. In fact, I've even had discussions there where if there were a series of them being co-held, if the district showed its capacity to be a co-holder, that they would turn them over. So I think the intent is not to try to get a lot of co-held easements out here. This was a temporary thing to fill a particular need.
Representative Smith?
Thank you, Chair Krupp. I think Representative Gilman asked my question, but I guess my question is, can you not do this without this statute?
Chair Krupp and Representative Smith, we have been told that even though it is in our statute that we can hold property, we can own real estate and the interest therein, or thereof, or whatever the legal terms are, that there was a problem that if the transference of the land or some conveyance of the land took place or something like that, maybe, you know, the easement would not travel with the land in that sense. So what we were told is, well, there is one thing in statute that, you know, removes any question that you might be challenged on, and it would be putting your name in 271. So that's what we were advised to do.
Yes.
And who advised you?
It is an informal opinion given to the Department of Agriculture by somebody in the Attorney General's office, and that's about as vague as I can get.
Could we get a copy of that?
Do you have a copy of that?
I do not. Maybe the gentleman in the back of the room do.
I see Deputy Director Craig says he does, so yes. We'll be able to get a copy of that. Thank you. And Representative, one last question before we have five other people have to testify in the next 12 minutes.
Yes, sir. Mr. McDonald and Mr. Stieber, I know our Yamhill County Soil and Conservation group is just outstanding. What I'm wondering is, who already does this? Are we competing with somebody already in this business?
Representative Krupp and Representative Nelson, there's lots of people that do this. State agencies can do it. Some federal agencies can do it. There are some land trusts that hold easements. The particular kind of agricultural conservation easement, there's not as many people that are holding those, but there's lots of kinds of easements.
But conservation easements, I'm wondering, is there a competitor? Are y'all the first to think this up?
No.
And go for it.
We're not the only
ones. There's lots of them?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say lots of them. I don't happen to have the roster list in front of me. That I do not know.
Land.
You'll have to ask the land use expert in the back of the room.
I think in the statute, Representative, which is in the bill, that it pretty much seems to indicate to me that it's agencies.
Yeah.
State, county, metropolitan service district.
Park and recreation, so forth.
Yeah, they look like they're all governmental bodies.
There are some private nonprofits that can do so as well.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Chair, I'd like to call Chuck Craig from ODA. On deck will be Matt Blevins from OEC. Welcome, Chuck, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record. I'm Chuck Craig, the Deputy Director for the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, I handed out two pieces in my testimony, and I'm going to do my best here not to repeat what has been said. The legal opinion is actually a formal opinion. It was issued by Assistant Attorney General Larry Knudsen in August of 2000, and we'll make the opinion available to the committee. This bill really, I think, should be viewed kind of as a clarification or a technical correction in a sense that as has been pointed out, and as the piece that you're getting that has the powers of the Soil and Water Conservation District directors says districts already have the authority to acquire property and to have easements. When the conservation district or the conservation easement statutes were written, however, they left the Soil and Water Conservation Districts out as a named entity that could hold those particular easements. And the characteristic of a conservation easement that's important that Representative Nelson has talked about is that it's a way to create a perpetual easement that runs with the land. And that's very important for people for estate planning particularly. So the Attorney General says, look, what you've got here is the legislature creating a statute that gives a specific group of entities the authority to hold easements. You are not among those. One of the interpretations is that they did not intend for you to have that authority, and therefore, even though generally you can hold other kinds of conventional easements, we believe that your authority could be challenged, and therefore, that's why we ended up with this bill. I would just point out a couple other items, because I know we're very short on time. One, there are already 37,000 conservation easements out there that we know of, held largely by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, by the Federal Wetlands Reserve Program, and by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So this is not a new issue. What we're trying to do is create an avenue here for landowners that want to conserve particular values on their land. So if, you know, if, for example, you've got an area that's great habitat for a particular wildlife species or something, you can set aside that part of your land indefinitely for that purpose.
Okay.
And the reason that we want soil and water districts to be able to do this is they are a government entity. They are made up of elected officials, they're accountable, and they're local, and the landowning community has confidence in these local folks. They are much more likely to engage in a discussion about easements with them than they are with a state or a federal agency. And that's I think I'll wrap up my testimony with that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate that. And we're going to call Matt Blevins from OEC. On deck will be Sarah Vickerman or Bruce Taylor, whoever's here. Bruce, you're here. Good. Welcome, Matt, for the record.
Thanks, Chair Krupp, members of the committee. For the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to testify. I'll just cut to the chase. You guys can read my more extensive testimony, but I just wanted to make the point that OEC does support House Bill 2754. Conservation easements are a well-recognized conservation tool, and because of their environmental and economic benefits, many farmers and ranchers are interested in conservation easements. However, they may have concerns about working with currently available easement holders. Because soil and water conservation districts are locally based, well-established organizations, they generally are respected and trusted by local landowners. Allowing soil and water conservation districts to hold conservation easements increases the likelihood that a farmer or rancher will be comfortable developing an easement, which we think is really key right now. I think it's clear, key to understand also, that the bill does not require soil and water conservation districts to hold an easement. It just merely grants the districts the opportunity or authority to do that. The funding really is not an issue right now. The 2002 Farm Bill has several sources of funding to use to acquire conservation easements. OACD and the Soil and Water Conservation Districts are quite familiar with the Farm Bill, and associated conservation programs can leverage funding through those programs. So we think this is a good bill. I think it should go forward. I encourage you to pass it.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks. Appreciate that. Bruce, you would, please. On deck will be Glenn Stonebrink.
Thank you, Chairman Krupp, members of the committee. Bruce Taylor,
actually here on behalf of Sarah Vickerman of Defenders of Wildlife. Sarah had to step out, and I'll be very brief because I think most of the points that we wanted to make have been covered. Defenders of Wildlife has had a long interest in conservation incentives for private landowners, and most recently being a participant in a process started by the 2001 legislature, a interim study process coordinated by the Departments of Forestry and Agriculture, looking at recommendations to this legislature for changes related to conservation incentives. This particular issue, soil and water districts holding conservation easements, was one of the issues they looked at and is covered on pages 26 and 27 of the report that's now being passed out to you. The full incentives working group did not get to the point of endorsing this concept. There were a few members, I think, that had some general concerns about conservation easements at that point, and they stopped short of endorsing this particular bill. Defenders of Wildlife very strongly supports it, though, for all the reasons you've heard today. It's not a mandatory thing. It's permissive, allows districts to take on this opportunity if they choose, allows landowners to take that option if they choose. Conservation can happen in a lot of different ways. This just provides a couple more options that may be more comfortable for some kinds of landowners. And I'll just conclude with that. Thank you.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Sure. Can you tell me how this also grants authority to this soil and water conservation districts to acquire highway scenic preservation easements? So, which are different than conservation easements. So,
I'm sorry, I cannot. And if John McDonald, that was the person that I was going to point to for any questions that came up. I wonder if that's just something that was in the original statute dealing with conservation easements, that perhaps all those things are lumped together and maybe they all came together with this one.
Okay, thank you.
Actually, Representative, that's a pretty good question. And we're not going to go to work session on this bill today. I think we ought to explore that a little bit further. I think that's an interesting point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming forward today. Glenn, come forward. And last but not least will be Don Schellenberg.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Glenn Stonebrink with the Oregon Cattlemen Association. In the essence of time, I would really prefer to defer to the next time this bill comes up, if there will be an opportunity for public comment.
Yes, Glenn, there will be, because you've given us written testimony that clearly raises some questions that I think we ought to explore a little bit further.
I do apologize. I threw it together rather quickly. I would like to revise it and actually have a few more concerns. I'd rather defer to another.
Okay. Time. Thank you very much, Glenn. Don.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. Good bill should pass. Thank you.
All right.
Well, a little bit more than that. but not much. Farm Bureau does support the bill. And many entities can hold conservation easements. In fact, the board had a very long discussion about that, determined that since others can, they're looking at doing it themselves. And so whatever endorsement that's worth, I thought that said a lot about our state board. So,
interesting. Okay.
And we do support the bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. We will, it's a very interesting concept, and I think that clearly we should explore it further. And I think that it has quite a bit of support, and clearly we want to have some continuing discussions about it before we move the bill to the floor. So with that, we're going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2754. And members, the last thing we're going to do today is we're going to bring back into committee the Barron Cougar bill. And so the chair is going to, well, you already have it there.
Is it the same one?
Is it the same thing he has?
I haven't read off of it.
Okay. Read off of this one, Representative Hunt. Okay, Representative Hunt, you have a motion. Open a work session on House Bill. We're just going to open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2436.
Okay, members, Representative Hunt has moved the rules be suspended for the purposes of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2476. 36. Jeez, dyslexic today. 2436. There is no discussion on this. So those are the opinion that the rules should be suspended for reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2436. Is there any opposition to that? Hearing none, so ordered. The rules have been suspended. Okay.
Chair?
Yes.
I move that we now reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2436 was passed to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Members, Representative Hunt has moved that we consider the vote by which House Bill 2436 was passed to the floor with a due pass. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
The purpose, since I made that motion, I'm just curious about, so what was the matter with my motion?
Which motion, Representative?
That we move with a due pass to the floor on that bill.
Actually, there was an agreement worked out amongst the interested parties before the bill came to the floor to amend the bill. And we decided that that would be in everyone's best interest. So does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion? Yes, Representative.
I would just say, in terms of further answering my colleague from Yamhill County's question, I think it's a real opportunity to really focus on making sure we do address the public safety problem, because I think there's large agreement that there is a public safety concern, really, especially related to cougars, and how can we address that in a way that we can actually build some broad consensus among the full House and hopefully get some of the governor that he can sign.
So, Mr. Chair, is the purpose of this bill to take bears out and leave cougars in the bill that I recommended we pass?
I believe that's the general direction. I think there's also some ongoing discussions regarding bait issues that folks seem to have come to agreement on. So that's basically the reason we're doing that. There will be amendments. Should we pull the bill back into committee, there will be amendments offered. We will clearly hear the bill again in terms of a work session and move the amendments. Further discussion? Hearing none, is there anyone opposed to reconsidering House Bill 2436?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Thank you. You know, I want to be a very cooperative person.
And we appreciate that.
People don't have to tell me too many times when a danger exists. This is one time I really believe it does with bears and cougars, so I really have a hard time. I don't want to say that I don't have a problem with us doing this, but we do. And I do have a problem because I know those bears and cougars are a tremendous, oh, God, I just, the thought of children or seniors or, you know, individuals walking, our recreation in this state, for us to put our citizens in vulnerable positions, it's bad enough having, you know, guns and all sorts of things in the hands of the wrong individuals and drugs, so forth. I do have a problem with it, and I don't know what to say, but other than I do have a problem of not working on what I know would be good and safe for our people.
Representative, I do appreciate those comments, and you will have an opportunity to visit with the stakeholders about why, especially the proponents of the bill, felt that this was a proper and a good direction, and they'll have an opportunity to convince you and persuade you that that this is what is politically necessary.
Okay, I understand that, but I wouldn't put a six-year-old, you know, behind the wheel in my Jeep, so I really don't want to put him, you know, in a campsite.
Actually, Representative, I'll have to tell you a story about being a six-year-old behind the wheel and how that turned out one day.
Oh, good.
Off the record, by the way. Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Those are the opinion that the committee reconsiders the vote by which we passed House Bill 2436 to the floor. We'll vote aye, and those opposed, no. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
As a courtesy, aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Beyer.
Aye. Representative Warren.
Now, wait a moment. I'm not sure we have a... How do you record?
She said yes.
Oh, she said yes. Okay. And, okay, all right. All right. Fair enough.
Yes.
I the motion passes. Thank you, members, very much. I appreciate your good work today, and we are adjourned. Like I said.